I like that.
Ray Brown's Talkin' Birds.
Made possible by the generous support of the Birdwatchers General Store, Orleans, Cape Cod. BirdwatchersGeneralStore.com.
By Vortex Optics, with the VIP warranty. Their unlimited lifetime promise to keep you and your optic covered. Learn more at VortexOptics.com. And by Hog Island Audubon Camp. For full camp schedule, program details, and to register, visit hogisland.audubon.org.
Good morning, afternoon, or evening, and welcome to our show number 1036. Starting off with a conservation note, Saturday, May 3rd, marked the first ever international plastic pellet hunt, in which folks from all over the U.S. and in more than 25 other countries hunted for, picked up, and took notes about those pellets, also known as nurdles, which are the building blocks of plastic production and which are shipped all over the world to be melted down and made into things like plastic water bottles and plastic bags and other items. And they're often spilled during manufacturing and transport, littering our lands and waterways and also causing harm to birds and many other creatures. How big is the problem? Scientists estimate that every year, 10 trillion plastic pellets enter our oceans. Your humble host played a very small part in the event, hunting for plastic pellets outside a big plastics factory in Manchester, New Hampshire. We'll try to get some hunt results and report back here on that next week. Well, guess what? We're going to hear from Mike O'Connor twice today. What's that? No, that's a good thing. We'll hear from him with Let's Ask Mike Live in a few minutes. But right now, it's Mike by way of an audio postcard.
Oh, you hear that, Ray? I think somebody's working on my house. At least I thought so. I thought we'd do a little construction project. But it turns out it's the old northern flicker. Mm. And this is what they do this time of year. They bang on drain pipes, downspouts, chimney caps, yeah. I think on my solar panels. Nothing bad, at least I hope it's nothing bad. But they come out and they announce their territory by drumming. They don't sing as well as the other songbirds, so they drum. Oh, there it is again. And a lot of people get upset. They're not doing any harm. They're just banging on something that resonates, makes a lot of sound, and wakes a lot of people up. And I say, get over it, enjoy nature. And then when they stop, you can go back to bed. But it's not doing any harm, so just relax and just enjoy it or pretend your neighbor's doing some, because, oh my God, some construction project. All right, that's it. I got to go listen, enjoy that lovely sound. See you later. Bye.
All right. See you later, Mike, and see you very soon, actually, on Let's Ask Mike. And as Mike said, those woodpeckers are not doing any harm unless you're in another part of our home state of Massachusetts where a pileated woodpecker famously or infamously has destroyed at least 20 car mirrors. It's been all over the mainstream media, so probably you had a chance to see that story, but it's very easy to find in any case. As far as audio postcards go, we'd love to have you send us one. Just describe what you're seeing, kind of the way Mike just did. Just speak into your smartphone or other digital recording device for whatever, half a minute long. Whatever it takes, and whatever you're seeing or hearing, or both, then just send the file to Ray at talkinbirds.com. And now, a mystery bird contest preview. We're not banging a couple of rocks together. It certainly sounds like that, and you could attract this bird by doing that. But that is the actual sound of our mystery bird, a medium-sized chicken-like marsh bird, with a compact body, short tail, and a long, slightly down-curved bill. It can be gray or reddish with dull stripes on its flanks. Our bird is a year-round resident along the east and Gulf coasts of the U.S., from the mid-Atlantic states to Texas, and breeds up into New England. It eats mostly crustaceans, but also small fish and insects, seeds and birds, eggs and slugs. That's our mystery bird. What do you think it is? We'll do the actual contest a little bit later, and we'll offer a bonus clue if necessary. We have beautiful prizes, including this very special Broom Squirrel Buster 150 feeder. Genuinely squirrel-proof and chew-proof as well, and easy to clean. And features a vented seed tray to keep the seed fresh and dry. And from fresh-cut paper, makers of beautiful life-size pop-up floral bouquets that are wilt-proof and crafted to last a lifetime, we have a certificate for 5 beautiful bouquets, and you could even choose the new Hummingbird Oasis bouquet, brought to life with a kaleidoscope of hummingbirds that take flight with a gentle pull. That is a beautiful thing. And those are our prizes on the contest coming along just a little bit later here this morning. We are so grateful to our Talkin' Birds ambassadors. They are listeners who become ambassadors by agreeing to let us send us a bunch of little cards. Send them a bunch of little cards, our Talkin' Birds cards, to hand out at their convenience and leisure to friends and neighbors. And help us spread the word about birds and conservation, which is kind of what we're trying to do here. And from right here in Massachusetts, we'd like to say thank you to Carrie S. from Lincoln, Massachusetts. Carrie says, I love all things birds and learning about them, and I love sharing the joy of birding. Thank you so much, Carrie, for becoming a Talkin' Birds ambassador. Meanwhile, out west.
This is Joe Komatsis in Santa Cruz, California, which is unceded territory of the Swaswa-speaking UAP tribe. I became a Talkin' Birds ambassador because I believe in the power of curiosity, connection, and conservation, all of which Talkin' Birds offers. If you're thinking about becoming a Talkin' Birds ambassador, I would highly encourage you to do so, because as an ambassador, you're promoting education, stewardship, and bird joy.
Beautifully said, Joe. Thank you so much. As Joe knows, it's easy to become and to be a Talkin' Birds ambassador. So join our family. Just go to talkinbirds.com, no G in talkin'. Click on where it says Get Involved at the top of our homepage, and you'll see how to become a Talkin' Birds ambassador. Still to come today, another California connection. We'll meet a college student from San Diego City College who'll tell us about his Campus Audubon chapter and the work they're doing in aid of birds and the local environment. Also today, Mike O'Connor will join us again, this time for Let's Ask Mike Live, in which he'll talk about what is really the best time to look for birds. And up next, a superb Sylvan songster is today's featured feathered friend. Last week's featured feathered friend was a warbler with thrush in its name, the Louisiana water thrush. This week's bird is an actual thrush, and one with an especially beautiful song. It's the hermit thrush, a small thrush with olive-brown wings and back, a rust-colored tail, a buff-colored breast, grayish-brown flanks, and dark spots on its buffy breast and its white underparts. And it has a distinct white eye ring. The Cornell Lab of Ornithology's All About Birds guide describes a hermit thrush foraging behavior known as foot quivering, in which the bird sometimes shakes bits of grass with its feet to catch insects. A behavior it also displays, says the lab, when calming down after seeing a flying predator go by. The hermit thrush's breeding range extends from Alaska to Newfoundland and down through much of the lower 48, and it's found year-round all across the southern half of the U.S. and down through Mexico. Its preferred habitats include coniferous and mixed forests and thickets during winter and in migration. Hermit thrushes in the west tend to nest in trees, while birds east of the Rockies are usually ground nesters. The hermit thrush is a bird whose sweet song
has taken it into the hearts of those who hear it, and even into a Walt Whitman poem, "When Lilacs Last in the Dooryard Bloomed." And at least two American musical groups, Hermit Thrush and Hermit Thrushes, named themselves after this bird, and a former indie rock band from Canada flipped the name and called themselves Thrush Hermit. The bird whose song many regard as the most beautiful of any North American bird species, today's featured feathered friend, Catharus guttatus, the hermit thrush.
Music by Peter Noon of Herman's Hermits. Welcome again to our show number 1036. Well, National Audubon has a program that it calls Audubon on Campus, which it describes as the next generation of conservationists making an impact today. There are campus Audubon chapters all over the U.S., including at San Diego City College in California. And to tell us more about the program and some of what his chapter there in San Diego is doing is Juanjo Londoño, who's the current president of the San Diego City College Audubon Club. Good morning, Juanjo.
Good morning, Ray.
Wonderful to have you. Thanks for joining us here so early in the morning out there in the West Coast. So your group is a subchapter, if I'm correct, of San Diego Bird Alliance. How is a chapter like yours, Audubon campus chapter like yours, different from a regular Audubon chapter?
I believe part of the Audubon on campus idea help us connect to this new college students who are trying to figure out what they can do to both help the bird population as well as the environment. And we help them connect with not only our own outreach events, but also kind of help them maybe transition into a proper San Diego Bird Alliance voluntary position.
Mm-hmm. So you're the president of the club now and involved, I'm sure, in many of the projects and programs that you do. And by the way, I think it's right to say, focus a lot on conservation initiatives as well as things to benefit birds directly. Tell us about some of your projects.
Yes. So one of them are bird-focused projects right now. We're working on building a chimney for the migrating chimney swifts that come to San Diego. Mm-hmm. But we also take care of community gardens, both on campus, in San Diego's Old Town, in different elementary schools. We do native gardens that help the local bug population and bird population. Mm-hmm. And we also do other things, like right before finals, we have a mindful birding event where we take the students to the park so we can sit down and relax before our finals and listen to the birds.
Yeah, birding as relaxation. I know they did a chimney swift project, and maybe there are many others as well, but I know Birds Canada embarked on a project like that a few years ago. We really need to get in. Update on that one, but has yours been in place long enough that you can get any sense of results from it yet?
Not yet. We're on the last stages of getting everything set up so we can start construction. Mm-hmm. We have scouted a place. We have selected a place. We are just in the process of signing the last bit of paperwork so we can get the chimney built.
All right, nice. We will definitely keep track of how you're doing with that. One of the things, too, that we talked about, Juanjo, before the show was the idea of community and how that's important to what you're doing. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about that.
Yes. So I think it all stems from our great mentor and leader, Professor Lisa Chaddock. She is the overseer of our club. And she definitely ingrained on us that part of what makes this club so important is that the way we do events has to be with community and giving back to the community. Like I said, our native gardens that are either at elementary schools or maybe with a church. We also do a lot of outreach in events that are about for example, Love Your Wetlands Day, which happened in February. Mm. It's an event where we get to do a lot of outreach and talk to a lot of different local communities, different local organizations, and see how we can connect to work together.
Nice. So you mentioned your mentor, Professor Chaddock. I know that's a big, important part of creating a club like this. So for any college students who might be listening right now, what's your message to them about starting an Audubon on campus chapter and what they have to do to make it happen?
I think the first step will be to make sure that your campus has a chapter or is open to the idea. And second of all, get involved with your professors. If there's a professor that will be willing to or has an idea behind maybe doing a club to protect the birds on campus or something regarding environmentalism, you guys can probably reach out to National Audubon. Mm-hmm. And you can also reach out to your local city's chapter and maybe see how you can connect to make it a chapter on campus.
Okay, so to a chapter, an Audubon chapter, or to National Audubon to get that started. Amazing stuff. Juan Ho Londoño is president of the San Diego City College Audubon Club. You can find them on Facebook and Instagram. And also, I think you mentioned Discord is a favorite spot for you. And folks can find that, I guess, by going to either one of those other platforms. Is that right?
Yes. So you can either follow us on Instagram at SD City College Bird Alliance. You can also find us on Facebook. You can find our server on Discord and request to join, or you can send us a message through Instagram and we'll send you an invite link.
All right. I'd love to talk to you again, Juan Ho, because you are a microbiology major, and I know you're planning to pursue a doctorate, and we'd love to hear about how that is going as well. Juan Ho Londoño, president of the San Diego City College Audubon Club. Juan, thanks for being with us. Good luck with your studies, and keep up the good work with the club.
Thank you so much, Ray, and thank you for what you're doing. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, for sure. Juan Ho Londoño here on Talking Birds. And up next, it's our Mystery Bird Contest in just 1 minute. Hog Island Audubon Camp has welcomed nature enthusiasts to its shores since 1936. It's a program of the Seabird Institute, and the island hosts five-night sessions for adults, teens, and families taught by the world's leading naturalists, ornithologists, and artists. Hog Island campers deepen their relationships with the birds and the ecosystems around them during the island's immersive educational camps. New for the 2025 camp season is Let's Go Birding Together. Scheduled during peak fall migration, this session is a safe space for queer birders to connect with nature and each other while learning ways to foster a similar environment in their community's home. For full Hog Island schedule, program details, and to register, visit hogisland.audubon.org.
All right, let's bang those rocks together again here.
No rocks involved, just our mystery bird, a medium-sized chicken-like marsh bird with a compact body, short tail and long, slightly down-curved bill, gray or sometimes reddish with dull stripes on its flanks. It eats mostly crustaceans, but also small fish and insects, seeds, bird eggs, and slugs. We'll hold that other clue until we see it's necessary, if necessary. We'll find out. But here's the thing. Call us right now and tell us what you think that bird is. Or take your guess, and if your guess is correct, you'll win that beautiful Brome Squirrel Solution 150 feeder and five beautiful life-size pop-up floral bouquets from fresh-cut paper. And that could be even if you don't get the right answer, because a drawing will determine a winner in any case. So go for it at this number, 781-837-4900. One more time, it's 781-837-4900. And up next, that would be Let's Ask Mike live in just 1 minute.
The flutter of a tail feather, the flash of a wing bar in mid-flight. You don't always have a lot of time to identify a bird in nature, let alone to appreciate its beauty. But with Vortex Optics, you'll have the power to bring every wild moment closer. When you choose Vortex, you're choosing to have a partner in the field as passionate about nature as you are. Whether you're spotting old friends on the backyard feeder or packing for a once-in-a-lifetime trip to add a few species to your life list, Vortex offers a full range of optics and optics accessories for every birder and every budget. And whether the birds are taking you to another state or another country, you're always covered by the Vortex VIP warranty, an unlimited lifetime promise to keep you and your optic covered. If you'd like to learn more, or if you need help choosing your next optic, give Vortex a call at 1-800-4-VORTEX or visit vortexoptics.com.
Here's that music. Can't do without it for Let's Ask Mike. It's Let's Ask Mike live today. And folks sometimes have a little debate about what's the best time to look for birds. Some say it's early in the morning. That's kind of the conventional wisdom. I guess some others maybe push back on that a little bit. But let's find out from the man who really knows, and that would be our Mike O'Connor down there at the famous Birdwatchers General Store on Cape Cod. Good morning, Mike.
Hello. Good morning, Ray. And if you listen, yes. It's quiet in my house now. The flickers have done drumming for the season, apparently.
Oh, done for the season.
I heard that audio postcard fantastic earlier.
That was a good one, yeah. Who was that?
That was a good one. And, we got whacked pretty good for about 2 weeks, but now they're all busy nesting. And that shows you what happens when they drum and then they get busy with the babies and they leave you alone for a while. But I just wanted to put that in. That's all. And what was your question again?
I don't remember the question, but I thought you were going to say, I knew you were up early because you sound so wide awake, so you must have been up for a while. Oh, that reminds me what the question was about whether it's when is the time to look for birds. Is the conventional wisdom true or is it not true?
Yeah, I think so, especially now. Earlier is better. Why is it better? Well, first of all, it's May, and it's migration is going on. A lot of songbirds that we don't ordinarily get to see are passing through, and they tend to fly at night, and then they calm down when the sun comes up, and then they For the first few hours, they look for food and then they take a nap before they continue on their flight. So they're active earlier, pretty much at sunrise, or a few hours after that, and then they calm down. So if you're going to go look for birds in May, which you should, because you'll see different birds you don't ordinarily get to see because you get the migrants, early is better. And if you look at the checklist of songbirding areas, that those lists tend to be longer for people who get out earlier in the morning. So that's kind of the best time to go. As May winds down and then you get into the non-migrating season, into the breeding season, then you can get up a little bit later because the resident birds, the birds that are nesting in your area, they'll be singing first thing in the morning to establish their territories, but then they get busy hunting and looking for food for their nestlings, and so then they're more active a little bit later, or for quite a while, you know, mid-morning to almost noontime, and then baby birds are fed, and everybody takes a nap, and it gets a little bit quieter, and it gets a little warmer. But the other reason to go earlier in the morning is there's fewer people around. Yeah. You know, there's fewer in the parks, there's fewer people playing Frisbee, fewer dog walkers in the neighborhood, there's fewer landscapers first thing in the morning. So you get that peace and quiet and fewer people. I know a lot of birders like to chat with other people. I kind of like to be quiet, so I like it early because I don't have to chit-chat with people. I can focus on the birds. But then if you're not an early riser, don't worry about it. Yeah. Later in the year, you can look for waterfowl, look for shorebirds or waders, and those birds are there any time of day. And if you really like to sleep late and don't want to go out till real late in the day, then you can switch and start looking at sunset for whippoorwills or nighthawks or even owls. So this bird's going all the time, and you should get out all the time. Mm-hmm. But in May, I'd get going early, set your clock and do it, and then you can sleep later in the year.
Well, that's some good information and some good encouragement, too, for late sleepers. But one other thing, though, there's always the thought that late in the afternoon, almost in evening, birds become active again, feeding to get, kind of fed for the night. I think David
Sibley. Yeah, no, that's a good point.
Yeah, how real is that? David Sibley has kind of poo-pooed that idea, if I'm not mistaken, so I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, what does he know?
He doesn't know that much when you think about it. He writes a lot of books. But,
yeah. Oh, I think so. There was a time when I used to run my store pretty much by myself, and I'd have to go to work first thing. I didn't get to go birding till later in the day, especially in the spring, and I did pretty good. Mm-hmm. I used to see quite a few birds after work. So, yeah, don't give that up. You know, do it when your schedule works. Years ago, my schedule was later in the day. Now I can get up earlier, so it's better. But it's good to get up during migration because you'll see birds you don't ordinarily get to see. And, I'll talk to David Sibley later.
Straighten him out on that, yeah. Okay. Get up early if you can. Otherwise, you do you. All right, Mike. talk to you next week.
Okay.
All right, Mike O'Connor here on Talking Birds, and we're back to the rock banging together thing here one more time for our Mystery Bird Contest at 781-837-4900. And I believe we have Leah in Dayton, Ohio. Hello, good morning, Leah.
Hi there.
Hi. Welcome to Talking Birds, and thanks for calling in. And I guess you heard the clues, Leah, and maybe the sound of the bird there or the rocks banging. What do you think that is, sir?
I believe it's a clapper rail.
Clapper rail is exactly what it is. I didn't have to give that bonus clue about the... Do you remember the clapper on TV? Maybe that's a while ago.
I've not seen that.
That was a thing where you clap your hands and you make your lights go on and off. Yeah, it's a great invention. Anyway, that is absolutely right. And I think we have time for a bonus question here. Let me see if I can find this bonus question if I have time here, having to do with the clapper rail. Well, I can't find that one, but we have another one here. Are you ready for this bonus question, or would you like to try it?
Yeah, sure would.
Okay, when scientists recently embarked on a biological survey in northwest Peru, where the Andes Mountains meet the Amazon rainforest. Did we do this one already, Jesse? You're not too sure? Let's do this one instead. This is interesting. Okay, here we go. Recently in Huron County, Michigan, folks were shocked to see a snowy owl perched on a pole. The shock was not in seeing the owl. It was in seeing the color of its plumage, most of which was a bright reddish-orange. Theories abounded as to the source of that color, but owl expert Scott Widensall suggested what seemed a reasonable answer. What did he say was the likely source of that reddish-orange coloration? Was it A, an unexpected change in diet? B, a genetic defect that affected the bird's melanin pigment, or C, de-icer from a nearby airport. That sounds silly. I might be tricking you here. What do you say is the answer to that, Leah?
I'm going to say A.
A, which would be an unexpected change in diet, which is a very perfectly logical answer, but... Now, again, this is according to Scott Widensall, but he is one of the leading experts in the world, I think, in owls. And he said, in all likelihood, it was de-icer from a nearby airport that gave that owl those reddish-orange feathers. So there you have it. In any case, you did have the right answer on our Mystery Bird Contest, so we'll send you those beautiful prizes from Brome and fresh-cut paper.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, Leah. We are out of time for our show this morning. Thank you so much. Next week, our special guest will be Danae Wolf, author of the new book, Grass Isn't Greener, The Everyday Conservationist's Guide to Bringing Nature to Your Yard. See you next week.
Ray Brown's Talking Birds.
Made possible by the generous support of the Birdwatchers General Store, Orleans, Cape Cod. BirdWatchersGeneralStore.com.
By Vortex Optics, with the VIP warranty. Their unlimited lifetime promise to keep you and your optic covered. Learn more at VortexOptics.com. And by Hog Island Audubon Camp. For full camp schedule, program details, and to register, Visit hogisland.audubon.org.